Here at Loch Associates Group, people are our business. Use our flexi retainer against any of our employment law, HR, health and wellbeing, and mediation services. All at a price that suits your business and with no long-term contracts. Use this time to recover and grow your business and let Loch Associates Group deal with your people needs. Find us at lochassociates.co.uk.
This is Channel 2. The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello. Mason Borough Council, who are calling themselves MBC now. See what they did there?
Yeah, do you know what that's short for?
I think it could be short for Mason Borough
Council.
Yeah.
It could be.
They're seeking tenders. So this is quite interesting, Paul Andrews. They're for suitably experienced parties interested in submitting their proposals for the alternative use of the Archbishop's Palace.
Mm.
Interest is expected from operators, developers, contractors, consultants, funders, biz owners, event managers and organisers, all of which listen to the bunker, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And experience in operating wedding conference centres and, of course, multi-use buildings incorporating events, weddings and cultural and public spaces. So the council wishes to appoint a suitably experienced company to work in partnership with on this project. There are some key dates if you're interested, and there's a timeline for the procurement tender. It was released on Friday the 19th of November for an expression of interest deadline at 12 o'clock Friday the 3rd of December, so that's this week, is the expression of interest deadline. And then there's a deadline for submission of your tender, which will be lunchtime on Friday the 7th of January. So you've got about a week. And then there's an evaluation, which is week commencing the 10th of January, if you've recovered from Christmas and all your noggins, 2022. Paul Andrews, and there'll be interviews around the 17th of January and an appointment of the contractor a week commencing the 14th of February 2022. So that's quite exciting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the Archbishop's Palace. Is it huge?
It's Maidstone. It's on the banks of the River Medway.
Okay.
It's
scenic.
It's very scenic. It's a lovely place.
Big.
It's fairly substantial. It's a lovely place. It's very old. and I spent some time
up the chimney there.
No, I spent some time looking at it before they announced what they were going to do. They asked me and one other chap to go and have a look and see what we thought could be the uses for it.
Mm.
The problem with it is it is so old and beautiful.
Is it a listed building?
It is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's a Grade 1 listed.
Do you know it, Rebecca?
Oh, yeah, very well.
It's a Grade 1 listed building. It's absolutely gorgeous. But it's a nightmare to do anything in because, one, it's a listed building, and two, cabling it and stuff like that is just really difficult.
And is it really cold and flagstone-y?
No. It's a nice building. It is a nice building. It's currently used by the council for weddings.
Okay.
And to be honest, that's probably its best function.
Absolutely. It's a kind of dream wedding venue, really, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Look, very photographical.
It would be awful if it was turned into flats.
Yeah. No. There's a covenant on it that doesn't allow that anyway. It can't be developed from that point of view. So if you remember going back to the email you just read, what they're looking for is someone to take over running it as a venue.
Mm.
That's what they want. It is possible to run it as a venue. There are lots of meeting rooms. There are different sizes.
Mm.
One of the things they asked me to look at it for was whether it would make a co-working space.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it would, but
not all of it.
But
some
not,
of it.
Yes, yeah, some of it would. But you couldn't. You know, it costs a lot to run that building, and the business model wasn't there to pay the running costs of a building just by having co-working there.
Is there a restaurant there and cafe and things?
No. There's kitchens.
But not set up kind of as a public-facing thing. It's an event space.
Yeah.
Yes, but you could have a fabulous restaurant if it's by the river.
Yeah, you could. It could be a venue. It could be a venue with a restaurant Meeting spaces and a wedding venue. That is its most likely function.
I know we're going to talk to Rebecca in a minute, but uprising of garden centres and farm shops during this pandemic has been amazing. And I was when I was camping in Rutland, we went to a garden centre and it was amazing. So they had all the usual sort of gifts and, you know, vegetables and things, but they had this amazing restaurant. We had full English breakfast. It was great. Lunches, you know, cakes and things. It was absolutely thriving. Mm. Great place to go.
It is that diversification of revenue streams, isn't it? You're not going to make your money just by selling plants.
No.
So you've got to sell me something while I'm there.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Keep me there.
And this is an issue, kind of following on from what Tim was saying, said. Really, is the cost of doing business nowadays, you know, with taxes, with business rates, with regulations and everything, make it incredibly difficult to have a business model that is just, you know, straightforward. Yeah.
Well, how can you second guess what the government will do next?
Exactly, and that is a massive problem, especially at the moment. You know, you gear up with a hospitality venue like that, and then they come along and shut it. You know, and they go, sorry, no, you can't go there anymore unless you've all had seven jabs or whatever they're going to do this week. So it is incredibly difficult, but it's a beautiful place in Maidstone, and it has a beautiful outlook over the river if you don't open the windows, because it whiffs a bit.
What whiffs? Is the river?
The river, yeah.
What does it smell like? Sort of
foggy?
Flowers,
Jules.
Is it boggy?
And puppies. And
no, but is it a boggy smell, or is it boggy, or is it sewagey?
Just imagine what a river running through Maidstone smells like.
But use your imagination, woman.
Well, you know that we have a huge sewage problem where we are in Whitstable.
Yeah, yeah.
We do. I mean, you can't swim sometimes.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're dumping sewage in the Medway. I mean, it doesn't need that kind of help. it has its own problems at the best of times.
So is it rubbish?
No.
It's going in?
No, I don't
it's
know.
It's like what, trying to get blood out of stone. I want to know.
Because if you'd ever seen it, you'd know.
Should we get a little punt and go down there?
My office is right next door to it, okay?
All right. So, what do you smell of a morning?
The river, yeah.
So is it a sulfury, rivery, boggy smell?
No, it's just a manky smell that comes off the river if it's in the wrong direction.
Because they have been cleaning up the rivers, haven't they,
in London? I'm trying to tell you, they used to have a dragon boat competition on the river, yeah, every year in the summer, dragon boat racing, yeah? And they had to stop it because one year somebody fell in the river, okay? And they nearly died of poisoning, having fallen in the river.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We don't let our dog drink from the river.
You're not selling that venue, are you?
Yeah.
We don't let our dogs drink from the brook at all. Dogs have died from drinking from the brook in Swalecliff.
Yeah. Anyway.
On a more pleasant subject.
This has become a very morose show, and I don't know why. Yes, but it's a gorgeous venue. Do take a look at it if you're in that marketplace. And despite what I said about the Medway smelling a bit, it doesn't really matter because it is a lovely venue. And the outlook from it is fantastic. And as it happens, the front of the building currently overlooks an Art Deco garage that used to be a car plant, would you believe, in the 1920s. It was a Singer and Roots garage. They actually built cars there, but it's an Art Deco building which is also listed. Now I can't remember, Peugeot, I think. Yeah, it was Peugeot actually had it last, and they've moved out, so the building's empty, and it's being redeveloped into Art Deco apartments. So
I love Art Deco. It's my favourite era.
Yeah, so the outlook from the Archbishop's Palace will be wonderful, looking over this Art Deco apartment.
It might be a silly question. It probably is. But where did the Archbishop go?
Where did he go?
Well, where is he?
Well, I don't know.
Do they not
use it anymore?
He's probably
at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
They haven't used the Archbishop's Palace for years. I'll tell you what used to happen there. It used to be bedrooms,
right,
for use by the circuit judges at the High Court.
Because I was wondering whether it could be a hotel, turned into a decent hotel.
One of the things we discussed was, could it be turned into a hotel?
Yeah.
And yes, it could, but it wouldn't be very big. You wouldn't have...
How many rooms?
You'd have about 15.
So it's a boutique.
So it would be very boutique-y, but you could do it. And that's what it was actually used for a long, long time, because on the other bank of the river is the Crown Court. And for a long time, it was used as accommodation for judges on the circuit to stay in.
I've worked for quite a few boutique hotels, and it's quite hard to make money with quite, you know, 15 rooms.
Yeah, exactly.
You need a restaurant.
Yeah, definitely. A restaurant where people are eating all the time, aren't they? Yeah. They never stop eating.
She says eating.
Popping something into her mouth. Yeah.
This is homeopathy.
Right. The Kent and Medway Hydrogen Summit has been hailed a huge success.
It was fabulous.
It was hot air. did you go to it, Rebecca?
I did go to it.
Did you?
Yeah.
As experts met to discuss the latest developments to achieve net zero emissions by 2050. Following on the heels of the UN's COP26 conference, the event at the historic Dockyard Chatham was attended by researchers, innovators, energy section leaders and Rebecca, and spearheaded by the University of Kent, Christchurch University and the University of Greenwich. It provided a platform for the latest updates in both hydrogen research and clean energy development. Maybe we'll talk about that in a minute as well. As
absolutely.
You were yeah. Interesting technology, hydrogen. Kent-based businesses are able to apply for a voucher to implement a digital or technology solution or project to help them with their business resilience and economic recovery. Each voucher will cover costs up to a maximum of £1,000. The scheme will run for 9 months or until the voucher budget has been fully allocated. Businesses will be able to redeem a voucher for services from a range of suppliers that KCC has procured in the following areas: web-based activities, remote working technologies, software solutions and apps, digital marketing and promotion activities, skills and capacity building, equipment and small investments to facilitate digital activities. So if you want to find out more about that, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB, there's a thing about that there. What you got, Liz?
Folkestone-based... I've got a lot of homeopathy under my tongue, sorry. Folkestone-based digital marketing agency, Sleeping Giant Media.
Mm.
They've won awards, Paul Andrews.
They have.
At the Investors in People Awards of this year, the firm scooped the Employee Engagement and Reward and Recognition Awards at the virtual event. They also had two members of their team, Amber Vellacott and Holly Cook, as finalists for the Young Person Awards. The company offers unlimited holiday and birthdays off, profit share, annual salary rise, and flexible working in addition to a host of other perks. So a lot of our HR businesses that listen in, they'll like that, won't they?
That's fine, this is the young person.
Oh, hold on.
Who's playing a video?
It's me.
Are you filming me while I chat?
No.
Logistics company DHL has signed a deal to become the first tenant at a major new development in Kent. DHL has taken 110,000 square feet of space in Panettone Park. Now, why have they called it Panettone Park, I wonder?
Because it's owned by Panettone.
Oh, really?
It's coming up to Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you can't stop eating it. And do you know what, Rebecca? I smear mine with butter. Are you having fun, Paul Anders? Previously the site of Aylesford Newsprint. So it's gone from Aylesford Newsprint to Panettone.
I love it.
So they actually make the cakes there, do they? Or the bread, the Panettone?
In my mind, certainly that's what's happening. It might just be my fantasy, though.
Yeah. Staff at DHL, oh, this is what Paul was talking about earlier, will be relocated to its existing distribution centre. You can't get the staff, Tim.
No. Basically, what happened there, the feed that wasn't working suddenly cut in.
I could tell,
I had it on my phone waiting to see if it cut back
I could
in,
tell.
And then I couldn't turn it off.
It was like I had my twin sister in the studio.
Yeah.
So anyway, staff at DHL, who, as Paul Andrews was alluding to previously, was, you know, the listeners love it when it all goes wrong though, don't they? They absolutely love it. You don't have to answer, it's fine. Tim will answer me. Don't the listeners love it, Tim, when it all goes AWOL?
It is pantomime sense. Yeah,
they love it, don't they? Oh, no, it isn't.
Guess what caused that problem?
Tell me. Twitter? Outage?
No. Bloody Bill Gates.
No.
Yeah.
What's he done?
The computer tried to update automatically to Windows 11 and hung up.
Well, he's too busy growing soy for us all to eat to be doing and all that, I think. Anyway, so staff at DHL, as I was saying, will be relocated from its existing distribution centre. God, no, when Tacey listens back to this, she's going to go mad, isn't she?
Yeah.
Industrial developer Panettone is creating a 1.9 million square foot of logistics space at the site after permission was granted in March. It has said its plans to invest 180 million into the site with hopes it will create 3,000 new jobs. Now, as we were saying, Tim, will they find these 3,000 people to do the new jobs?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. Agreements have also been signed with four other potential occupiers who have not yet been revealed for warehousing and distribution space on the 90-acre site near Junction 4 of the M20. So we'll keep you abreast of that news, won't
Absolutely.
We?
Absolutely. Do you know what?
I
want to go sensible again.
Yeah,
it's it's about time as well, isn't it? Yeah.
I know.
We're going to talk to the lovely Rebecca Smith from the University of Kent, Kent Business School. Rebecca, good afternoon. Welcome onto the Business Bunker Show again. Sorry about the mayhem today.
It's to be expected.
It is really.
I'd have been disappointed if it hadn't all gone wrong.
Yeah. It does happen on quite a regular basis these days. Thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to talk to you. We've got a lot to talk about. And lots of things that we want to cover with you. I think we're going to kick off, but you've just had an event, haven't you, talking about the gig economy?
Actually, that's just coming up. It's the Hydrogen Summit, which was last week and was fantastic. It was great to be together in person in the Dockyard Church. But no, next week we're hosting an event virtually, showcasing some research which two of our academics, Sarah and Michael, have just completed, looking at the realities of working in the gig economy.
Right.
Okay. It's a new term for something that you said earlier has existed forever.
Mm.
And it's not just Uber and Deliveroo. It's everything from that to digital creatives and everything in between. And there's a lot of evidence to show that it's a really growing area. People are going to more flexible working, freelance, call it what you will, portfolio careers.
Mm.
You know, the number of people working in gig economy has gone from 2.3 million, I think, in 2016 to 7.5 million.
In the UK?
Wow. In the UK,
yeah.
So it's you know, that's a big jump, a big growth. It's worth about £20 billion a year in terms of economic impact. That's the same as aerospace industry.
Yeah.
So
huge.
It's not inconsiderable. And I think going back to what we were talking about earlier, what's going to drive the recovery is going to be entrepreneurship. It's going to be that self-starting, spotting an opportunity, going for it, being very agile in what is a very rapidly changing world. And I think the gig economy is perfectly placed to kind of fit that need, but the realities of working on it are very mixed, and there's lots of factors which are in play. And because it is kind of leading edge where this industry is going, government is slow to catch up. Tim, you might argue that's a good thing.
Well, I don't want them to catch up at all, even in the starting blocks.
Go away and leave it alone. Well, it's interesting you say that. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, so this is my opinions. You know, one of the problems here, and you did make a kind of reference to it with things like Uber and Deliveroo, that has deflected the marketplace, because there's been a lot of issues around that, around people driving cabs for Uber and people riding bicycles delivering pizza, as if that was the entire gig industry. And that's the problem that I find with politicians, is they react to these things, and people, you know, you've got a particular one of the political parties is now coming out heavily against the gig economy, which is bonkers.
Yeah.
Just for what it's worth, when I left my last corporate job, I had a gig economy job, which led me to establishing 9 businesses. Yeah. If you start outlawing things like the gig economy, you don't get that anymore. Yeah. And the gig economy, as you also highlighted, Rebecca, is vastly bigger than just driving a cab for Uber.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or delivering pizzas.
Or delivering pizzas.
It is, yeah.
The problem I have with it is, you could say we need protection for those workers, which we do. You know, nobody should be abused at work, and I don't think anybody thinks that they should be abused at work, and everybody should be looked after properly. But, of course, there's 1.8 million unfilled full-time jobs. If you don't want to work in the gig economy, you don't have to.
Yeah.
It's not mandated. You know, nobody comes around your house and goes, you go and drive a cab for Uber, otherwise you're not getting your money. So I have a fundamental problem, because I actually like the gig economy. And I first read a book that was written in 1971 by Professor Charles Handy called The Shamrock Organisation and The Portfolio Career. which you just made. So that's over 40 years ago, nearly 50 years ago, Charles Handy was predicting this is how work would pan out. Mm. And fairly much it has, especially in the technology industries, which was my background. But it also seems that politicians have tried really hard to stop it. And the latest stupidity is IR35, which is one of the most bonkers pieces of legislation I've ever come across in my life.
Spent a lot of my life filling in IR35 forms for working with different entrepreneurs who we engage with in different parts of the curriculum and the work that we do at the university. It is a largely meaningless exercise.
Exactly, yeah.
And presumably time-wasting takes a lot of time to fill in these things.
It's not the shortest form you'll ever fill in a day, I have to tell you that.
Yeah.
And when you're doing it multiple times, and now you have to do it for each contract you enter into, you can't do it once and go, well, that's that person sorted. So next time you do a contract, you have to do it again.
Okay, so you've got this event coming up shortly, discussing the whole gig economy thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at people's motivations behind why they are engaged in the gig economy. Is it about work-life balance? Is it about having a portfolio of skills that they're developing? You know, what is it that's motivating people to get into this kind of style of working, if you like?
Yeah.
And also looking at the influence of platforms. We've mentioned a couple of them, Uber, Deliveroo, but, you know, there are lots of them out there, whether it's Fiverr, TaskRabbit, who are springing up in order to kind of service the gig economy.
Yeah.
And what is the impact of those platforms? Is it becoming like social media, that perhaps the influence is too great, that, you know, we don't have that diversity, and, you know, the big players are taking up the market? All these things is what Sarah and Michael have been looking into. They've been speaking to people working in the gig economy in the UK and in Germany, and they'll be sharing the findings of their research, and it's going to be a roundtable discussion as well. So if you are working, portfolio, career, gig economy, call it what you will, if you are an entrepreneur, come along to the event. It's virtual, Tuesday the 7th of December.
So that's next Tuesday.
Tuesday, and join the debate, because it is really about hearing more views.
It's a fascinating debate, and it's a very important debate as far as I'm concerned as well, because people doing what you just call it freelancing, basically, and I made reference to the fact that when I first started, I was very definitely a gig worker, and the whole point about it is I had a set of skills which I could earn money from, but I wanted to develop another set of skills. But I couldn't do that and still earn money and pay my mortgage and look after my family and all the rest of it. So I had to do two jobs. One, using the skill set I had that earned money, while I developed the new skill set that I wanted to develop to move into. For me, that was crucially important that I was able to do that by having a portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. Apparently 48% of gig workers have a full-time job as well. And it's about it's something that we see at the university all the time, that students are working towards obtaining their career, you know, their degree to go into a career, but they've also got a side hustle or a company that they've started themselves as well. That is very much, I think, like what people are going to be moving towards more and more.
It's interesting, because there's also a lot of controversy over zero-hour contracts with very few people, especially politicians, even understanding what a zero-hour contract is. Yeah, there is no concept in employment law of a zero-hour contract. Yeah, there's just a contract of employment, and you have the same rights on a zero-hour contract as you have on a full contract, no more, no less. But a lot of people don't like the look of it. But one of the interesting things about zero-hour contracts, and I lump that in with the gig economy because they kind of overlap in a large degree. One of the things about zero-hour contracts is 4% of the country work on a zero-hour contract, Of that 4%, 31% are students.
Right.
Yeah, because that's how students earn money when they're not at lectures, If you make them work full-time, how are they going to earn you're not going to go to lectures. You need that piece... Back when my granny was alive, it was called piecework, it's that flexibility to do a few hours here and there to earn some money to supplement your living costs while you're doing something else. And too many people overlook that as a benefit of a zero-hour contract.
absolutely. I think this event's going to be the opportunity to talk about what ecosystem we need to support the gig economy. I think it ties very much into kind of post-pandemic working. You said people want to work from home, but maybe they don't want to work from home all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know,
parents who've got kids and school to pick up and stuff.
All those things. Yeah. You can build your work around your lifestyle.
I mean, we've had that this week with Stella Creasy, the Labour MP that wanted to take her child into the chamber. You know, more and more parents want to look after their children whilst working, and it's very hard to do that unless you can do it flexibly. You know, with school runs and all the other kind of things that you have to factor in.
And the schools seem to pick up so early now. It's like, you know, like 2:30 or something. Some of the kids are, the younger ones seem to not hardly be there.
Okay, so it's a virtual event, and can anyone join in?
Absolutely.
Oh,
even
lovely.
You, Paul.
Even me.
Even you.
Oh, yeah. I'd ban me if I were you.
Trouble. Don't let him in.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. So if you go to the Kent Business School website and click on the events tab, you'll see all the details of how to register there. But it's about an hour, 90 minutes over lunchtime, so just drop by.
At the end of that event, will there be anything produced, like an outcome from it, in terms of, you know, some notes on what was said and what the thoughts and feelings were?
So the event itself is the culmination of some research which has been done by our academics, which absolutely will be published, and I'm sure the as you say, the outputs of the discussion on Tuesday will certainly form a part of what we publish. Yeah,
right.
And anyone can come on to this. It doesn't have to be Kentish people. It can be all across the UK.
It's global.
Global. Yeah. Fabulous. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I'm sure that will be really popular.
Okay, cool. So we'll look forward to that. That's next Tuesday. But you've been out and about already, and you went to the Hydrogen Summit as well.
I did, yeah. I can't claim to understand everything about hydrogen based on my afternoon at the summit. But what I thought was really interesting was the huge range of projects and players getting into the market. We were talking, there was large energy companies, the BBC, so I can say Scottish Power, can't I? I'm not allowed just to allude to them. So for everyone from big energy companies like Scottish Power to small startups based at Discovery Park looking at hydrogen-fueled planes and kind of everything in between. I think the opportunity, as I understand it, for hydrogen in the region is really, really strong. We're looking at it being one of our major fuel sources by 2050. Just really great to see the region's research organisations, Kent, Greenwich and Christchurch, coming together to talk about those opportunities. For the business school, our part in it is looking at building resilient supply chains. So if we're going to move to hydrogen, what does that look like? You know, what other things do we need supporting it? Where is it coming from? Where is it going to? How is it getting there? And how can we make that the most sustainable green supply chain that's possible? Because there's no point moving to hydrogen if you're moving stuff on petrol-fueled cars.
Yeah.
So it just kind of all needs to work together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from my point of view, I'm a bigger fan of hydrogen than I am of electric vehicles. And the reason for that is as you say, a lot of the infrastructure can be substituted for diesel and petrol. Yeah, so you can deliver hydrogen to a pump and you can drive into a garage and fill your car up with hydrogen. With electric vehicles, if you live in a block of flats, good luck with plugging your car in.
It's going to be a long cable, isn't it?
It's going to be a long cable out of the window, isn't it? So, you know, that is just something that nobody ever pays attention to, the logistics of actually charging a car when you don't live in somewhere that's got a drive with an electric charging point on the wall. Whereas hydrogen is a straight swap to a large extent for petrol and diesel in terms of its delivery mechanism. There are issues with hydrogen, obviously, because it can be a little bit inflammable. But then so is petrol.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Don't be pouring it over your barbecue.
Exactly, yeah. So it's interesting. And I don't know where they are in the cycle, but in the middle of last year, I did a thing about a hydrogen manufacturing plant they were opening in Herne Bay.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if it's open yet or not.
I think it has or is imminent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're going to produce hydrogen for Canterbury City Council to power hydrogen buses. And there's already in Gateshead, all the local buses are all powered by hydrogen already in Gateshead. And that was a project that was running for quite a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's Rise, the company in Herne Bay.
Right, OK.
Yeah, the other people who were down there were Port of Dover, P&O Ferries, you know. It's a really diverse industry that's developing, and it looks like regionally we're going to be quite significant players in that market.
Absolutely.
It's really exciting.
Yeah. I think it is a very interesting marketplace, and as I said earlier, for me, I think if you're going to look at alternative fuels for personal transport and freight transport, I think hydrogen at this moment looks more viable than electric.
Well, I mean, electric in itself gets rid of pollution in the air, but if you're running that from a grid which is powered by coal
and gas,
then it's actually not.
And if you've got the old mines with children doing the batteries, it's not too good either.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As if you can get the chemicals for it.
Yeah. Absolutely. You can manufacture hydrogen. That's the thing. It does use a lot of electricity actually to manufacture hydrogen, but you know, it's in a contained place, isn't it, that you're going to manufacture it. That's interesting and fascinating. Other universities, I know the three universities were kind of pushing this summit. Are you guys doing a lot of research in that area?
Yeah, I think so, very much. Working with industry partners. This isn't my area of expertise, I should be very honest up front. One of my colleagues, Simon Barnes, is our man on hydrogen.
Is he? We need to get him on the show.
You should absolutely get Simon on the show. You would love him. He knows all about the work that we're doing. But yeah, we're working with some fairly big players in industry to look at how we can develop technology. And as I say, looking at supply chain resilience to make sure that when it's implemented, that it is going to work efficiently. I think the other thing we're working on as a kind of set of research organisations in Kent is the Growing Kent and Medway project. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
5-year UK research and innovation funded programme, £18 million, bringing together research organisations, Greenwich, Kent, and NIAB, EMR, East Morling Research, looking at increasing productivity, sustainability and innovation in agriculture, horticulture, food and drink sectors. So over the next 4 or 5 years, we'll be working with business, looking to attract business to the region to develop what's called in the bid an excellence cluster. Why wouldn't you want your cluster to be
good
excellence?
What a catchphrase that is, excellence cluster.
but it's really interesting. We're doing stuff around resilience in seed and soil. Greenwich has got an amazing food tech lab where they'll be looking at developing new food and drink products. NIAB's got an amazing, they're building this giant greenhouse, which is looking at vertical farming and innovation in that way. Yep. So it's going to be really exciting times ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we quite often overlook these kind of things, don't we? Because they're in development at the moment, and you don't really think about it. But as they roll out, it's as I was saying earlier with politicians, it's a timescale. Yeah, and in the early days of an innovation, you don't really know much about it, and then the first iterations of an innovation are expensive and unique and different, you know. And I always use the story of mobile phones, because I was one of those sad people that had a Motorola E-Tac in 1989, which cost me $4,000 then. Yeah, and I could only ring one person on it, because that was the only other person I knew that had one. And back then, you couldn't do STT calls. It was just mobile to mobile. So us sad people had those for no other reason other than we were showing off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As you say, one of the areas of Growing Kent and Medway is around sustainable packaging. And so I think, like, at the moment, there's a lot of work being done in sustainable packaging, but a lot of it's quite expensive.
Yep.
But as it gets adopted more widely, then costs will come down. And
absolutely. And there's a whole field of things that we are looking at and can be doing. Just I've talked about this a couple of times on the show over the last couple of weeks. I'm a big fan of nuclear. I worked in the nuclear industry in the 1970s.
You've done everything.
Not really. One of the things that we're looking at rolling out are what are called SMRs, small modular reactors, which are fairly easy to build and can power. Each SMR can power about 1 million homes Of course, there's still a lag here. When you talk to people about this, you know, people don't understand, and they go, oh, you know, but what about disposing of the spent uranium? Mm-mm. Solved that one about 25 years ago. They don't dispose of spent uranium anymore. They refuel it and reuse it. You know, so the nuclear industry has got to kind of go on an education program of educating the general public about it.
It needs a bit of good PR then.
They do.
Because everyone is associated with Fukushima and Chernobyl. Oh, and
hey, guess what I worked on?
Not Chernobyl.
No, Three Mile Island.
Oh, my goodness.
I worked for a company called Combustion Engineering, and they designed Three Mile Island for Westinghouse, which was the world's first nuclear accident. It wasn't my fault. I wasn't there, never touched it. the outcome of that was devastating. It was terrible. We had a broken arm, basically. That was the one thing that happened.
But that's the thing, you learn by doing. How could you know what fail-safes to put in place?
Yeah, exactly. And the fail-safe actually worked. Well, Three Mile Island, it actually worked. There was a leak. There was a radiation leak. Mm-hmm. Because the reason that it went wrong is that the operator accidentally tripped the fail-safe. And the reason he broke his arm is he tried to stop it working. Right? And he couldn't, obviously, and it broke his arm. And it caused, because he interfered with the process of it shutting down, it caused a minor radiation leak.
Right.
But, you know, even that's not as bad as it sounds, because, you know, there's more radiation in your back garden than there is in one of those things, really. But the interesting thing is, and all that technology, I was talking to someone the other day about fusion technology, which has been the big white hope of the nuclear industry for many, many years. And people are going, yeah, it's 50 years away. They opened the first fusion reactor in Nottingham 2 months ago. So it's not 50 years away. Now, it's not producing commercial electricity, but it works. It's a tokamak reactor. And
they kept that quiet, didn't they?
Yeah. It's on the site of a former coal mine, would you believe?
Oh, the irony is wonderful.
So coming back to Rebecca, there's loads of interesting things happening. And one of the great things is our universities and the University of Kent are leaders in this kind of field, is the development of a lot of these technologies, and the experimentation and the trying stuff out and the investigation is absolutely fascinating to see it unfold. Just while talking about fuels, the third fuel, and I don't know if anyone at the university has discussed this, I saw a thing the other day that Volkswagen Group, the car manufacturers, have been talking to some organisations in China, and they are working on developing what they call synthetic e-fuels.
Okay.
Yeah, which are chemically produced petrol, basically, with no pollutants in it, and it doesn't use carbon. I've no idea where they are in the cycle with that, but it's an interesting thing to explore, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think the future of energy has got to be a portfolio of different sources. I don't think. I mean, the storms that have hit the north and the west this week are proof that we can't rely on one source of energy.
Absolutely.
Because when it goes down, it goes down.
And you have to burn your furniture.
Or eat it.
Or both, yeah. Rebecca, thank you so much for that. It's a pleasure, as always, to talk to you. We look forward to the Gig Economy event next Tuesday. We look forward to hearing more about the Hydrogen Summit and the output of that, plus all the other interesting stuff you're doing up there at that old university place of yours, which is fantastic. And the Business Bunker Show has had a long association with the University of Kent, and long may that continue, because there's really fascinating stuff that comes out there. So for the moment, thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul.
Right. It's that time.
Let's be.
The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
I'm going to give you a number of events that are taking place, and at the end of this, I will give you a link to find out more and to book your free space. So I thought you were going to say something. So let me read through the list, and then at the end I'll give you the link. Lighting the Motivation Inside Your People and Customers is taking place on Friday the 3rd of December at 11 a.m. Maximising Your Membership on Wednesday the 8th of December at 12:30. and post-pandemic opportunities for small businesses on Thursday the 9th of December. There's quite a few of these. Overcoming fear and doubt in business, Thursday the 13th of January. Networking, let's talk technical for engineering, manufacturing and transport sectors on Wednesday the 19th of January. Transition to net zero with the Zero Carbon Business Portal on Wednesday the 26th of January. How to secure and manage PR for your business on Thursday the 27th of January at 11 a.m. There's also a Kent Women in Enterprise Virtual Networking on Tuesday the 11th of January, 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Property and construction event, making sure your project runs smoothly, on Thursday the 13th of January. That's hosted by Peter Searle, and it's part of a four-part property and construction series that is being held on a bi-monthly basis. The event's topic from Peter is three steps to winning tenders. So do look out for that on Thursday the 13th of January. I've got one more here somewhere. The Big Small Networking event on the 15th of December. Something very special is taking place. The largest small business networking event in the FSB's history.
It is. It is. Yeah. We're announcing today our special guest for it.
Oh, right. Can you tell us, or is it a secret still?
No, it's not a secret. I'll give you a clue. You've got to guess.
You
got to
go.
You don't have the authority, Paul.
Oh, right. Right, okay.
Handyforth Parish Council.
Yeah, Jackie Weaver. Yeah.
She's a legend.
She is, and she's coming to our big small business herself. Networking.
Is she? Blimey. Yeah. Right. For those of you who don't remember, it was a meme that hit, when was it, in the middle of last year? It was a lady that was running a parish council meeting and
it got quite lively.
Got way out of hand.
And she imposed herself on it and imposed order on it, did she?
Yeah, I can't say that Jackie will have control of the naughty room and put you in the sin bin, but she'll be coming along. It'll be great fun, so please do join us.
So that's on the 15th of December. It's a nationwide thing. It's the biggest networking event that's ever happened. And it's taking place online, so you can get involved. All of those events that I've just told you about, if you want to find out about any or all of them, find out more detail, or to book your place on any of them, and I think a lot of them are free events as well, aren't they?
All free.
Yeah, all free for members. If you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB, you can find them all there. So do check that out. Right, I've got one more thing to tell you about. Entries are now open for the Celebrating Small Business Awards 2022. We're celebrating the achievements, successes and resilience of small businesses and the self-employed across the UK, and you're invited. Whether you're shortlisted for one of 12 local awards or make it all the way to the spectacular UK final, it's time to put your business in the spotlight and show us what you're made of. It's free to enter, so what are you waiting for? If you go to www.fsbawards.co.uk, you can find out all about it, all the categories that are open for you to apply for, and you can register and apply for your 2020 Small Business Award nomination.
And already the South East is leading the way in the number of entries.
Really?
Yep. We're top of the pops with that. So if you want to get involved, it's free to join. You don't have to be an FSB member, but it helps. And it's great. With everything we've been through, it's time to showcase our small businesses and do some what we can to rally behind them.
Absolutely. So, Jules, have you got anything?
Yes, the ownership of a car dealership in the county.
Oh, this is amazing, this.
Sold for £64.5 million last month. It's set to see yet another change after its new owners agreed to be sold to the company behind the likes of online sellers We Buy Any Car and Cinch. Motorline, which had its headquarters in Canterbury, loads of car showrooms in Canterbury, across the county, was snapped up by Marshall Motor Holdings in October. And now Marshall of Cambridge has agreed to sell its majority stake in Marshall Motor Holdings for £201.06 million to the Constellation Automotive Group. Do you know them, Paul Andrews?
Yep. They're the people that own Cinch.
Oh, okay. I see what you did there.
And we buy any car.
Okay, so huge. Constellation is the biggest digital used car group in Europe. In addition to the heavily advertised We Buy Any Car and Cinch brands, it also owns British Car Auctions.
Yeah.
I love a car auction.
But that's amazing. Just look at those numbers again.
It huge.
But it was sold 2 months ago for 64 million. They didn't even get the name up on the door, and they sold it for 200 million.
Yeah. Mm. Rocking. Amazing.
The tax man's going to love that.
Yeah.
They will. And of course, secondhand cars are going because of this shortage for new cars with the something or other.
Chip shortage.
Chip, yeah. There was a word for the chip that I can never remember.
Semiconductor.
Now, there's a new era for Dandelion Time.
Oh, yeah.
In September, they celebrated the completion of the new site and head office in Westfali.
Do you know, I rode to Milan for them.
Did you? Oh, I remember that. Yeah. I was going to come on that. What were you in? I can't remember. Some little car.
No, I rode.
In a boat?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. How long ago was that?
About 2 years ago.
I remember you did a rally thing as well.
Yeah, no. I rode a boat to Milan.
And what did you do in Milan?
Nothing. I didn't go there.
Oh, it was virtual.
It was virtual.
I mean, I do remember that, yeah. I remember you being videoed. I just don't remember you going to Milan. You're not a big traveller. We were overwhelmed by the generosity of so many of our supporters, they said, and raised over £500,000 to fund this development that will enable us to continue bringing lasting changes to vulnerable children and families for many more years to come. And the site is already providing additional capacity to meet an increased need in the Maidstone area. This is like the Maidstone show today. Mm-hmm. And will allow us to expand our services across Kent and beyond. It's also a perfect venue for our training programs. Thank you for the support. We couldn't have done it without you, and especially you, Paul Andrews, rowing to Milan for them.
Absolutely. They're a lovely charity, Dandelion Time.
They are.
And they've been very constrained by their premises for a number of years, so I'm pleased that they've managed to expand.
And there's a £300,000 funding for digital inclusion across Kent, opening at the end of November of this year. The new Kent Community Foundation Digital Inclusion Fund will offer grants of up to £10,000. And we love a grant on this show, don't we?
We do. And his brother, Phil.
Grant and Phil. I haven't watched since the days of Angie and Den, so I don't know what they're up to. Mm. To enhance digital offers in the Kent County Council area. So there's a generous match funding programme, thank you, they say, from Kent County Council. Kent Community Foundation's donors have raised over £300,000 for the new Digital Inclusion Fund. There is a little email here, that's Natalie, if you'd like to contact them to find out, at kentcf.org.uk, or you can go to www.kentcf.org.uk/funding and find out. It's going to be helping disadvantaged young people, mm-hmm. Including looked after children, to access online resources for school projects. Older people, Paul Andrews, to navigate digital services to help them to access benefits and health services, and vulnerable adults to access training and skills development to be able to live independently. Interesting, because I know that GPs now are telling you to, you can talk to them digitally. Well, my mum, 91, she can barely do the 8 a.m. phone because she can't hear, and she doesn't want to hang on and press this button and that button. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to think of our oldies, don't we, Paul Andrews?
Yeah, we do. I mean, but, you know, over time that will all fade away, and most things will be done in that way.
I think I heard driving in this morning, was it TSB closing 65 branches?
Yeah.
Throughout, as they say, that people are no longer going into branch, they say.
Yeah, well, they're trying to do away with cash, aren't they?
Yeah, except when you go to a market... or dry cleaners, as I said last week, it's cash only, which is always a bit scary. And there's my ice cream man that comes round in his little van, diddling ding.
Yeah,
he's cash only.
Is he?
Yeah, and I'm sort of more or less Apple Pay now on my phone. I don't really take a purse.
Yeah, I haven't used cash for years.
In fact, my dress is still at the dry cleaners because I didn't have 30 quid on me, you know, and it's cash only. And I don't think he's paying his tax, do you, Rebecca?
Wouldn't like to comment. That's why we need these moderators.
We do. We need a moderator. What do you think, Tim? You're Mr. FSB. Of these big, quite big companies, some of them, cash only. Food. I'm thinking of food, some restaurants and that.
When I was, cast your mind back a few years ago when there was financial difficulties in the Eurozone.
Yeah.
And they created something called the bail-in. So
in as in Cyprus, B-A-I-L?
Yeah, bail-in. So they in Cyprus, the authorities went into people's individual bank accounts and took the money to bail-in.
Scary.
So I don't like, personally don't think it's wise to go to a cashless economy. Again, we're talking about a broad range of energy uses. I think we should have the option for cash.
Well, I've just read on Twitter, I don't know how true it is, that the Greek government, if you're not double jabbed, they're going to be taking 100 euros
a month.
From over 60s.
Over 60s, until you get jabbed, they're going to take 100 quid, 100 euros a month out of your bank account until you go and get the jab.
The whole world has gone bonkers.
An argument for cash.
And your average
Dick Turpin wore a mask.
And your average Greek pensioner is not going to have 100 euros a month, are they, to spare?
The Greeks have never paid tax in their life. Exactly. That ain't going to happen, is it?
I can see me not holidaying in the Greek islands. I was rather looking forward to it. As a one-jab girl, I won't be able to.
Interestingly, though, you say about cash. I mean, but the thing I've noticed is more and more shops are saying no cash.
Yeah.
You know, they'll only take card at the moment.
Well, since the pandemic, especially, because of the touching thing.
Yeah.
But let them choose. Let them have the choice.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of it. All this rush towards uniformity. We're treading dangerous down a social credit system.
Yeah.
And I like to keep my money disturbing. Under the mattress, personally.
I like what you said before, Tim, and I think that is incredibly important, is we need diversity in what we're doing.
Choice.
We need different ways of doing things, If once you get everything locked into one way, it's a potential disaster. I'm not going to go into the absolute.
I was going to say, your bank crisis.
Maniacs at HSBC who have made my life a misery.
That's still going on.
No, yeah. I finally got away from them. But the only way I could do it was to move my bank account. That took me 3 goes.
We were on the phone to a bank the other day for about 30 minutes. I can't remember what it was about now. My new husband, he was going bananas. And he was just saying, please call me back. And of course, they never did.
30 minutes, bliss. Mm. I was on the phone for 30 days. I mean, but at the end of the day, though, this is the thing that we have to be wary of with all of these kind of things, is it's a technology glitch, yeah? It's a computer say no, and there's no one in those organisations prepared to break that cycle and go, do you know what, this is stupid. Let's do something to stop this happening, yeah? You know, at one point, they wouldn't talk to me because I didn't know my date of birth. And I assured them I was there, so I remember it. Well, I don't remember it, but I was there, and I know my date of birth, but they assured me I got it wrong. Now, you've got two options there. Either I'm wrong or they're wrong. Mm. What's the likelihood? But, you know, there was no one that was prepared to go, maybe we need to look at this. Mm. And that's what bothers me about technology solutions to everything, is once you rely on it, there's no method of breaking into the cycle of stupidity with it. Anyway, now I got away from them. They turned down the government switch system. Yeah, is guaranteed 6 days. Yeah, took me 7 weeks.
Oh,
wow!
And I lodged a complaint with the complaint service for switching, and they still haven't even acknowledged my complaint yet.
Blimey!
Yeah. So anyway, I got away from them eventually, but it was, you know, it was a nightmare.
That's appalling customer service, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Anyway, on that note, I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsor, Tenterson Chamber of Commerce, to our two fantastic guests, Mr. Tim Aker from the Federation of Small Business, Rebecca Smith from the University of Kent Business School, to my stockingly gorgeous co-host, Jill Sirkin. I'm going to be back on Thursday.
Who's on?
The lovely folks from Dementia Hospice, and we're going to be talking about that charity record I played earlier, plus the work that they're doing. So do listen out for that Thursday,
and of course,
1 o'clock.
And, of course, the Superior Show, Scoff and Quaff, is on Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
Yeah, back.
Okay. Right, we'll be back next week.
Bye-bye.
See you then.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.